Welcome to All the Bits, a fake radio show about board games, the community, and all the lovely, lovely bits. All the Bits is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network and is sponsored by Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Sean and Michelle.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 60.
In this episode's bits, we'll talk about Targi, Traintopia, Museum Heist, and Brussels 1897. We'll discuss the BGG Thread Spotlight. What is your favorite luxury board game item?
Bits.
And then we'll step up to the diamond, even though there's no baseball, in our next up bit. All this and all of our usual antics of asking pointless questions, guessing games, and drooling over bits. I have recently discovered the Korean baseball organization, the KBO.
Yeah.
So the only baseball league. Yeah, I know. The only baseball league, I think, that's currently playing in the world is the KBO.
Right.
And ESPN is showing games. So I have been watching Korean baseball because.
And I as well, because I follow baseball like I follow board games.
Right, that's true. And you know what the coolest thing is? And we should actually do this as a promotional item for all the bits.
What?
Is that, so there are no fans at the games, right? So what they're doing is, though, behind home plate, they have cardboard cutouts of people. And you can actually buy right to have your own cardboard cutout behind home plate.
Oh, that sounds like a Kickstarter stretch goal right there.
Yeah, it does. But
or
hey,
we should
imagine Sean and Michelle behind the home plate for like the Samsung versus Kia game, and all the teams are like named by whoever owns them. So there's like, you know, whatever. We could have behind like a big match.
That would be awesome. And we could be sporting some All the Bits t-shirts.
We could, and we
to
can
represent.
And we can even have a meeple like next to us. It would be awesome.
That would be awesome, actually.
I'm gonna look into
just the meeple part.
Just the meeple part, not us. Oh, so, hey, Michelle.
So there's our sports for the episode.
Korean baseball organization, yeah.
So check that off the list. The next thing we have to do on our list is tell all our wonderful listeners about the coupon code from our wonderful sponsor, Board Game Bliss. So if you feel like spending $100 on board games, you can take $5 off that order with the code ATB-TAKE5OFF100. And it's one use per customer.
Mm-hmm.
No cheating.
Very exciting. Saving money is always good.
Saving money is always good because it buys you more board games.
More board games. That's exactly it.
And $5 right now, you might say, hey, that doesn't buy us any board games. But at Board Game Bliss, for $5 right now, I believe you can buy ReWorld, which is a Kiesling Kramer game.
That's true. It's a K-Squared game.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Speaking of money and budgets,
yes,
I have a question for you, Sean. This is our Ask Me Anything bit where we ask each other anything.
We do.
A good thing we explain it because, yeah.
I know. What would you do? You'd be at home like Googling like all the bits, Ask Me Anything. What does it mean?
The only unclear one is our pew pew because we changed it from drive-by.
Whatever. Pew pew pew. No, wait, not yet.
Okay, here's my, with my awesome segue about money and budget, here's my Ask Me Anything. I have a scenario for you and I'd like you to recommend me a game.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, so I'm stuck at home and I have money left over for my
really?
Pizza budget.
Really? You're stuck at home?
For reals.
Okay.
And I have money left over for my pizza budget. That's a thing. Mm-hmm. My husband thinks the +4 soul-crushing card in Uno is hilarious, and he gets pure joy from watching people go bankrupt in Monopoly. Recommend me a game.
Okay. So, he likes mean games. Jeez. Do I have... Oh, okay. I'm looking at my shelf, but I feel like I don't have very many mean games. Can I just, like, say Kalis, because that's, like, the meanest game I know?
What about a two-player? Can you think of a two-player? I'm stuck at home, dude.
a two player. I don't know. I don't know if you could play Kalis two players. It's too mean. I don't know two player games, though. That's my problem. I'm looking at mine, what I have here. That's mean and might have like a financial component. I'm so useless at this. I got nothing.
I actually can't think of anything either. Like, oh.
Hey, Bitzers, if you can help us out here, let us know if you have any ideas.
I'm trying to think. There's got to be a card game that's just awful. Oh, you know what? What about like Roma 2 by Stefan Feld? There you go.
Sure, I'll take your.
There's word. A Feld for that. Hey, that's my new saying.
There's a Feld for that,
but there really isn't a Feld for many things. But
true.
In this case.
There is.
There's a film. That game is like dice rolling back and forth, attacking each other, and being like, oh, did you play this card last round? Done. Gone.
There you go.
So, not a fan.
That works. I know that was one of the few felts I feel like you weren't very into.
Yeah.
All right. So for me, I'm not going to ask you anything. I'm more. Okay. Well, I am kind of going to ask you anything, actually. So I've recently discovered. The random game feature on Board Game Geek. Are you aware of this? Do you know this? Do you know what this is?
No.
There's literally a thing that you can go under the browse thing and you just hit it and it pops up like a random entry on Board Game Geek. So I am going to hit a few times the random game button on Board Game Geek, Michelle. And I'm going to
touch the
game. And you are going to let me know if it is, you know, that game. No, we're not going to do that because that's mean. We're not going to do Marry, Death, Kill or whatever that is right now. But you're going to tell me if this is a game that you would play, own, or burn.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to hit random game here. And I'm guessing a lot of these we will have never heard of.
I was just thinking that.
Let's see. All right. So the first game is called Spectrum. It is a two-player game, Michelle.
Ooh.
It came out in the year 2002 and has zero ratings and one comment.
Aw, poor Spectrum.
I'm going to read you the description, or as much of the description I feel can tell you what the game is, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's a card game based on the colors produced when white light is divided by a prism. The deck of 52 cards includes 7 cards of various colors of a rainbow, basically. There are 7 cards in each suit, and there are also 2 wild cards, infrared and ultraviolet, and a prism card. The object of the game is to be the first player to play a combo. The combos that may be played involve cards of the same color or cards in spectrum order.
Sounds terrible. I'll be honest, it sounds a little bit like Phase 10.
Okay.
So I'm going to burn it.
All right. You're burning it.
Goodbye, Spectrum.
Bye, Spectrum. All right. Let's. This game's not even out yet. Come on.
Wait, what's the one comment? Not sure this is the same game we have. It's similar.
Oh, look at this. This is one that you're familiar with, Michelle.
Ooh.
Or you might be familiar with. I think you are. That is The Little Orchard from Haba. This game has a number of ratings, 126 ratings. Do you know this game?
I do.
I don't need to tell you what it's about. It's a cooperative game for children. That's the first line. That's all I need to tell you. Would you play it, own it, or burn it?
Well, I do own it, and I will continue to own it because my daughter loves this game. There's been games that she liked, but I feel like this was the game that got her into gaming. Like, she's not a huge gamer, but she was like, oh, board games are kind of neat, and yeah, so... Yep.
This was Nora's first game too, my daughter's, and she still brings it out. She doesn't play it. It's the first game she could actually play by the rules. Now she just kind of does stuff with the fruit and really dislikes the crow.
The raven.
Or raven, whatever it is. She's okay. All right.
This is the little orchard though. This is the one with the cherries on the tree, not my very first little orchard or whatever, with the big chunky fruit.
This was my first. This was my first. Yes, this was the
child. Well, in that case, I will play it, but I will not own it because I sold it because it's too little for Chloe.
That's fair. All right, let's see. We'll do one more here.
Okay.
Sure Shot Basketball came out in 1970. It's got no comments on here. It's a two-player game again, though. You see, it knows you. Children's games and then, like, two-player games. The object of Sure Shot Basketball game is to be the player to score 15 baskets. You take turns being the shooter and the blocker over a period of 5 shots. When a shooter attempts 5 shots, his turn is over. Players change places so that the player who has the shooter becomes the blocker, and vice versa. It seems to be one of those dexterity type games where you have to flick something to shoot it and flick something to jump up.
Yes, I'm looking at the one image, and it's like, you know, those old 70s board game covers with like two kids having lots of fun.
They look like they're having so much fun.
Yeah. It's like this big plastic toy. It's not a game. Let's just call it an activity because we are board gamers, modern board gamers. So these things matter. I would definitely play this. It looks like a ton of fun.
I know.
I would play for 5 minutes and get bored, but I would definitely play this game. 100%. Looks super fun.
It does. I used to love games like that. Any of those types of games. I feel like I would still love them.
I think I would have a lot of fun with this for the 5 minutes that I played it, for sure.
Speaking of 5 minutes, Michelle.
Okay.
Yeah, this bit usually takes us longer than 5 minutes because we suck at it. And that's our guess the game bit.
Do, yep.
Do, 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 do. Do, do, do,
do, do, do,
do. So in this game, we're going to try and get each other to guess the game by giving each other stats and mechanisms and categories and various other things we think will be helpful from Board Game Geek.
That is true. And I'm going to give you hints first because you've been talking a lot. Your Ask Me Anything was really long.
Sorry.
People need to hear my voice.
It was fun, though. I like it.
Okay. Yes, that was fun. All right. This one was published in 2018. Has a rating of 7.1 with 5.6 thousand ratings. Pretty popular.
Like a Kickstarter game.
Two to four players. I'm not answering that. In 30 to 45 minutes and has a weight of 1.84.
Two to four players?
Mm-hmm. In 30 to 45 minutes with a weight of 1.84.
Okay.
Let's see. I will give you the mechanisms, hand management, and pattern building.
Okay.
Oh, so you just expect me to just keep giving you hints?
Oh, it's not Sagrada?
No, it's not. I thought you were like, no, never mind, not Sagrada. No, it is not Sagrada. However, it's a good guess.
No, because that's dice. Okay, go ahead. Give me a hint. Or am I supposed to know it based on this?
No, I don't know. I'm just a little disappointed in your lack of trying. All right, some categories. We've got animals, which is very loose, and abstract strategy.
Really? I have no idea. Abstract strategy, and is it Baron Park?
No.
Oh, I guess that's a big part of it is animals. I have no idea.
Okay. It's got a very colorful cover.
Okay.
Colorful color. There you go. It's coming out with a second edition pretty quick here.
Oh, with a second edition? Okay.
It's got big chunky bits.
It's not the number 9. So it's got animals. Am I on the right track? Is it like a polyomino game?
You're not on the right track, but I felt like Sagrada was actually a pretty good guess. Kind of like colorful, abstract.
It's not Azul.
Nope. But it's kind of in there. Definitely in that line.
Sagrada? In that line.
And I did borrow this from you. I don't know if that
helped. Borrowed it from me.
I did. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so I should legitimately know the answer. Now I'm looking at the shelf.
I'm trying to think of what, there's not that much in terms of stuff to tell you. The type is abstract and family.
Oh. It will give it away if you tell me the designer?
I'll give you the artist, Chris Quilliams.
See, I feel like I usually know his games.
All right, I'll give you the designer. Emerson Matsuchi.
Is it one of the whatchamacallit? No, it's not one of the...
It's not games. One of the whatchamacallits, but it's with the same company as the whatchamacallits.
So Plan B?
Yeah.
Or, yeah? It's not as...
Or Next Move Games or whatever.
Oh, Reef.
Yeah, Reef.
Gotcha.
Which was recently $27 on Board Game Bliss.
Ooh, that's totally worth it for that game.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. All right, I suck. Here we go. Yeah, you ready?
That was terrible.
Wow, that was bad. All right. Here's my game. My game came out in 2017. And it has an 8.3 rating on Board Game Geek. It plays 1 to 4 players in 90 to 120 minutes, as the kids say.
Sorry, in what year?
2017.
17, okay.
90 to 120 minutes and has a weight of 3.96. Goodness.
Okay. Oh, man. I'm losing track of all these years.
All these years. That's fair. Oh, there's a lot of artists in this, so I'm just going to skip artists. It's a fairly popular game.
Yeah, okay.
Is a strategy game.
Is it? It's not Feast for Odin, is it? I don't think that would have a lot of artists. Okay.
It is a mechanisms cooperative game. It's got a whole bunch of... it really does have. But
Spirit Island?
Yes, that is it.
Wow, 3 years already. Well, I guess, yeah. Huh?
Yeah.
Cool. That was on your shelf of shame.
Yes, it still is. It's on my table of shame now. So I have it's on my table because it's calling me. I want to hopefully play it very soon because I hear the solo is great. And I love it. I do really like it. I still haven't played my copy, but I have it. It's out here with all my paints, which means something's going to happen. I'll probably paint instead of playing it, but something's going to happen.
But it made it to your table, so
it did. That's the newest thing. It goes from the shelf of shame to the table of shame, which is conveniently enough my working table.
Where it nags you.
Yeah, I just look at it. It makes a good stand for my camera too. So
good. Board games are good for those types of things.
Yes.
Yes.
You know what the elves are good for? Oh,
no, I had nothing. I was just going to start making something up.
You know what elves are good for?
Pew-pewing?
Going pew-pew on the internet. Pew-pew.
Pew-pew-pew. Pew-pew. Pew-pew.
Gosh, Dolly, Garnet, Dolly, something.
Every time I think about recording an episode, I'm like, oh, I don't want to do it. And then I think, oh, wait, I got to go pew-pew.
Pew-pew, that's fair. Pew-pew's the best.
That's actually not true. I don't think that. But I do enjoy pew-pewing.
We're going to talk about some games that we've played in physical or digital, as in my case, a little bit as well. And we have a fancy schmancy rating scale, Michelle.
Fancy. So fancy. Oh, you want me to say it? It's a 1 to 5 rating scale.
It's in the fake radio biz. I was throwing it to you.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Sorry, I missed it. A 1 is, that would be a hard no. 2, meh. 3, it's fine. That's a solid title, by the way. A 3. 4, tis a gooder. And 5, it's got the spark.
Spark.
Yeah. And our pew-pews are drive-bys. In that they are just normally after a few plays and, yeah, not like super in-depth.
Nope. All right. I'll go first.
Okay.
Because I am very excited to finally play this game. And I know it's been around forever, so I'm going to dig back into the cult of the old with Targi.
I've always heard Targi, but Targi, I could be wrong. Yeah.
Targi is a two-player game from Cosmos and apparently 12 other publishers, but I know it from Cosmos. Designed by Andreas Steiger with art by Tara Ekitsu and Franz Volwinkel. It plays in 60 minutes, has a weight of 2.35, and is a strategery game. So, as I mentioned before, I have had the opportunity to play this a few times now via Board Game Arena. Not the physical copy, because I don't think I could ever get my wife to play this game. I've heard tons about this game over the years, but never had the opportunity to play it. And so a friend of mine wanted to play it. We learned the rules, and I've been enjoying myself with this game so much. Basically, what you are doing is kind of like a worker placement type deal where you have your dudes on the there's a 5x5 grid, and you place your dudes on the outer edge of the grid. And what you are ultimately trying to do is create on the inner part of the grid, there are, I want to say, 9 tiles, different tiles that will do things like give you various resources or allow you to buy stuff, which I'll get to in a second. And you're buying stuff to get your points at the end of the game. But what's neat about this game is it's got like this crosshair mechanism in that what you do is, so let's say you place one of your dudes on, let's say, second from the right on top, and you place your another dude's second from the bottom, you kind of put your fingers in and see where they would meet. And then at the end of once everyone's placed their dudes, that's where you put these little tokens, which will signify this is what you get. And so that's a really fun thing, because you really have to, you really have to figure out, okay, am I going to be able to maximize my things by going here? Can I place my other guy, because I think you have 3 dudes, place my other dude somewhere else, which will let me get multiple things this turn. I don't want to get stuck with just one. And what you are trying to do is kind of a set collection E, in that each time you draft something, you put it on your personal tableau, you're building your tableau. And what you're trying to do is you're either trying to get, one of everything, you're trying to get all the same, or you're trying to get one of each per row that you have. So they all have different logos, like related to the desert type theme of the game. So one of each logo or all the same. So like all huts or whatever the things might be. And at the end of the game, I think when 12 things are built at the end of the game, that signals the end of the game. Or you make it completely around the board. There's also a robber, which is going to cause trouble and make you have to pay money throughout the game or pay resources when he hits 3 or 4 times. He's going to kind of attack everyone. But if you land up making it around the board once, or he makes it around the board once, that will also trigger the end of the game where everyone gets. It plays in about, 45 to 60 minutes. Once you kind of know what you're doing, it's more around 45. It's strictly a two-player game. And yeah, like I said, I've been playing this game a fair bit lately. I like the implementation on BGG, on Board Game Arena, because it's, the computer kind of takes care of everything for you, which is nice. You don't have to constantly flip cards over and over. There are a few other things with the cards. This is definitely a game I'm going to pick up when I can play games again with kind of other people. This is not a game my wife, I don't think, she would necessarily be into, but when I can play two-player games again, I would really like to, definitely want to get this game and play it. That's Targi. Have you played this, Michelle?
I have, yeah. I've had it for a long time. And I agree. I think it's a really great game. I don't pull it out very often, although I don't pull out a lot of games very often. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do think it's a very solid title. And the expansion is coming out this year, I believe. I don't know much about it. It's been out in German for a while. And now it's finally coming out in English. So I'm excited
And
to see what it brings.
Fairly cheap game. Like, I think I was looking up. It's an under under $20 Canadian game. I'm just looking at BGG, like Miniature Market, $14 to get. So it's a relatively cheap game for something that gives you a lot of gameplay. And because the cards are interchangeable and you're constantly doing new cards, you know, you're not necessarily, there's a lot of variability there. Or at least it feels like there could be a lot of variability. So I totally, after finally playing it, see why it's ranked 131st on BGG.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's got bits in the BGG store, those deluxe bits that they have. They actually look really nice.
Yes. I would definitely say tis a gooder. I do want to say it has the spark, but I don't feel comfortable giving anything the spark if I've just played the digital implementation.
That's fair. I don't know
if that's maybe in my head or whatever, but yeah. But definitely tis a gooder. And I from everything I've heard from people say, the physical version is the same as well.
Nice. Well, my next one, my next pew-pew, can't miss the opportunity to pew-pew, is kind of similar to Targi in the sense that it's a smaller game, but has a lot of depth and strategy compared, in my opinion, to many other small games. And that is Brussels 1897. This came out in 2019, has a current rating of 7.5 on BGG with 512 ratings. It plays 2 to 4 players in 40 to 60 minutes with a weight of 3. It's designed by Etienne Espriman. And art's by Vincent Josen. And it's published by Geek Attitude Games, which I didn't even realize. And I don't know that I've heard of them before.
Nope.
Cool. So this re-implements... Brussels 1893, is it?
Yep. Reimagines it. I don't know if it... Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I've never
played... Yeah, sure. Reimagines it. I don't know, whatever word they want to use. But yeah, it's basically a smaller, streamlined version of that game. And it does play 2 to 4. It's basically a card game that has a lot of similar mechanisms to its big brother. So I'll talk a little bit about maybe just the gameplay itself, and then I won't assume you've played the big brother, but basically what you're doing is trying to get points. And you do so in a variety of different ways, really. but what you have is a grid. Oh my God, I swear I can start every interview like this. You have a grid of cards in the middle and you have a hand of cards. Your hand of cards, think of them as workers, and they have they're powered 2 to 5. And all you simply do on your turn is play a card into the grid and you place your worker there and you take the card and basically swap them. And the trick is that obviously... and I'll explain why, but the more powerful, the higher the number of the card, the better. But the trick is you have to pay money. So if you put out a 2, you pay $2. If you put out a 5, you pay 5. And money is pretty tight in this game. It can be. And so the various cards in the middle, there's building resources, which you need to collect in front of you in order to get to build buildings, which are also other cards. And your first building is 1, your second building is 2 materials, your third is 3, and so on and so forth. You can get art. So you can collect art, and there are like different types of art that are represented by different colors in the game. And you can use that art to sell, which again, you do in the grid by simply taking a $3 card. Mm-hmm. Or there's an exhibition card, which is the first player card, which doesn't always show up, by the way, which is kind of cool. And that allows you to exhibit art, and everybody takes turns in order, and they can exhibit one type of art. And the trick is in the exhibition itself, you can only exhibit each type of art once. So if you have a green and I have a green and a red, I'm going to play my green first, because then you can't do your green, for example.
Okay.
And then there's also dudes you can get, and they give you a special bonus, and you can just take that bonus and toss them out, or you can keep them in front of you, and there's a spot that you can use to activate them again and again and again, well, each round. But they are going to cost money at the end of the game. You have to pay your people. Yeah. So that's the grid. And then there's a few spots that are by the board, and they let you, those are the spots where you can activate your guys. You can take an action, like a kind of a wild, you can do one of the actions, or you can take money. The trick being with those, like the first person who goes there costs one worker, the next person costs two, the next person three, so et cetera. And whoever places there at the end of the round, whoever placed the most workers there, most worker cards there, loses one to the prison. And you have to, there's a mechanism to get the dudes out, but basically you're out a card for the next round. So that's kind of interesting. So in addition to getting all those cards, another thing you need to consider is that within this grid, at the bottom of every column is a action card. And whoever has, at the end of the round, you check each column, and whoever has the highest sum, so again, your workers are anywhere from 2 to 5, gets to do that action. And a lot of the actions are moving up on these different tracks, which increase the amount of points you get for your buildings and things like that. So not only are you like, I want to take that spot, but you're also considering, okay, but does that, you know, where do I want majority for the round? You know, how much do I want to spend? All of those sorts of things. And in addition, on top of that, another layer of thinking is that each of the cards that you play have these this shield kind of in the corner, or quarter of a shield, meaning that once you've put four cards together, they create a shield in the middle. And if a shield is created, whoever has the most cards contributing to that shield gets points at the end of the round, which sounds kind of confusing, but it's not if you could see the cards and see how that works. So you're also considering, am I helping someone complete a shield? Am I giving myself a shield? So all of those things. So lots of different layers to consider when you're simply just placing a card to take an action or to take a thing. So that's the gist of the game. If you've played the Big Brother, you'll see a ton of similarities in terms of the auctioning or paying for your workers, the majorities, the seals, all of that, or shields, all of that's in the bigger game. So that's the gameplay in a nutshell. Ish. So in terms of bits, there's lots of cards. There's really nothing special. There's a little bit of a board. It comes in a very small box, like think as thick as, maybe thinner than Targi, and more like a card size. I'm trying to think of a game. Bonanza, maybe a bit bigger than Bonanza. So really nice and small, which is fantastic. In terms of the gameplay itself, it does feel very, very similar, as I've mentioned, to its Big Brother. And I do think it's a super solid, streamlined implementation of it. There's a bit of a rules overhead for a card game. Like, again, you know, when you pull something like that off the shelf, you're expecting a bit of a quicker, easier experience. And I felt like there's still a bit of a teach with this one, because there are so many little things. I do think that, in terms of, like I said, it was a solid implementation. I do think that it kept the best parts of its Big Brother, like that whole pull of decisions between the cost and the majority and creating the seals. And then you get more money if you pass early. And should I have the most workers in that spot? You know, like all of that stuff. So lots of like super fun decisions to make around trade-offs and that sort of thing. As with any card game or any game with a lot of cards, there is quite a bit of randomness. So I've only played a few games of this, but each time the grid did come out quite a bit differently, which is good because it means it has variability, but at the same time, it can really impact the game. Like if you have a lot of art and that ends up working out well for you the next round, you're probably going to do better, you know, if there isn't like a nice balance of what's presented within the grid. I don't think that there's a ton of variability, like realistically in terms of like big strategies and how to play it out. Like I think you're not going to see a bunch of different things, but again, I don't feel like that's what it's trying to be. So I think it's got great depth for a really small game. It's perfect for people who travel and like Euros and wants a small compact game. So I think it's great for that. I don't see myself like pulling it off the shelf a ton to play. Like I'd probably rather just play its bigger brother, but like it, yeah, for when we go traveling, or camping or anything like that, it's great for that. So I had a hard time giving this a rating because it's like for what it is, I think it's like more of a 4, but then when I think in the grand scheme of things, I'm like, you know what? I think it's a really solid game. So I'm going to give it a high 3, and that's Brussels 1897.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing this one. I think I got it slightly before/during when the lockdown happened, so I haven't really had the chance to play it yet. But I am, I'm interested to play it, to give it a whirl.
Yeah, it's impressive. Like it's always interesting to see how designers will take a bigger game and make it smaller, you know, like we've seen a lot of dice versions and that sort of thing. So I think, yeah, it's solid for sure. Cool.
All right. My next pew pew is probably not a sound you want to make when you're engaging in this activity. And it's called Museum Heist, which is a game that came out in 2017 from Fox Mind Game, and it is designed by Alex Randolph. So much like a Sid Saxon game, anytime there's a game by Alex Randolph, I'm always super duper curious to check it out and see, because for those of you who don't know, he's one of kind of the legends of board game design, and was doing it before designing board games was quote unquote cool type deal. So a lot of games you will see these days are based on things much like Sid Saxon, things that, you know, Alex Randolph might have at least got going back in the day. And this one is a re-implementation of, it seems like, multiple games. And when I start talking about this game, you'll see, that makes sense. So this game is basically, I will say, is basically just an abstract game with a element of bluffing in it, which is neat. But if you kind of look back at what it implements, it's very much just like moving bits around type deal. There's not much in this game that makes you think, oh, it's a museum heist, we're gonna go rob some treasure, that's not what you get in museum, artifacts or museum pieces. It's a token, and that's about it that leads you to believe, which is fine. But what you are trying to do in this game is you are going to get a deck of cards. I think there are 7 different colors. You are going to secretly pull out a color when you begin, and then you are going to move around any of the 7 characters on the board, always trying to get them closer to where the artifact, to where I keep wanting to say treasure, and that is not the right word. The jewelry or whatever on the board. I keep wanting to say treasure, and I don't know why. But you're moving the dudes around, trying to get them closer to the treasure, and you always have to move towards the treasure / art on the thing, and you follow the lines that are on the board. They are kind of like little mini hexes on there, and they're connected by lines, so you always have to do it. What's neat is that you can jump over, so you can, like almost like checkers, if there are other people lined up properly, characters on the board, you could jump over one, jump over another one, as long as you keep moving closer towards the art piece. Also on the board, there are, I think, 4 different secret secret entrances. And if you go onto one, as long as, again, as long as you're moving closer to the arc, you can actually go from one side of the board to the other. People also get two tokens, which let you swap any two of the characters on the board. Where the bluffing element comes in this game is that you can win one of two ways. Is by landing on the on the art piece, or by guessing who your person is. So if your opponent, let's say I'm playing with you, Michelle, and you have the red card, I can guess, Michelle, you are red. I would get the art token for that round. You need to get three. If you're multiplayer, if you're two player, you need to get four tokens, and that signals the end of the game to do it. And so if I correctly guessed that you were red, I would win that round to do it. And I would be able to guess by you being red is if you're super obvious. And let's say you just keep moving the red character closer and closer and closer and closer and closer and closer and closer.
Which is exactly what I would do.
Yes. So I would be able to guess that you're the token and I would get it. But where the bluffing comes in is you might be thinking, oh, Sean is going to guess that. He's going to guess that I'm going to be moving closer and closer. So you might be moving the red token closer and closer. And then when I guess, you're actually not the one. You're not the red. And I would get kicked out of that round. So I would drop out of that round. If you're two players, it could be a little bit more problematic because it would mean I would lose. So you're kind of bluffing. You might be moving around other pieces on the board again to try and keep them off track of who you are. So that's a nice little for a game that's basically just an abstract game where you're moving pieces around to try and get to a location as quickly as possible. To have that bluffing mechanism in there is kind of cool. It's kind of different. It's neat. Like I said, in terms of kind of the components and the pieces, there's nothing to write home. It's a very small box. There's a small board, very brown, reddish, beige, I think they were going for, which you might appreciate. There is some
I
color.
Do not appreciate. Not for this game.
No, not again. I mean, they could have slapped any theme on there. And as I was scrolling back before, you know, doing research, scrolling back, it seems like a lot of, like, the other implementations were just, a lot of them were very just moving pieces around type deal. But again, because of that bluffing, I think this is a 2-4 player game, but it works really well at two players. It's like, and to be able to have a bluffing mechanism in a 2-player game is something you don't find that often. It's super quick. It plays in like 20 minutes once you know what you're doing. It's 50 minutes each time you finish a round. Each time you finish a round, you just kind of reset the board and start again and do it again, which is cool. It's neat. I don't know how much long-term replayability there is in this game, to be honest. But it's a game because, like, this is a game, like, you know, knock on wood, when we get back to kind of life, I would love to introduce to my board game group. Because I think it's something that adds a little bit more strategy. You know, 8, 9, 10-year-olds love lying to each other about everything. So they would probably really enjoy the bluffing mechanism. And it's super accessible, picks up really quickly. There's not a ton to do. So it's kind of like, you know, one of those games I think works well for a gateway thing. I think a respectably high, like, you know, I mean, it's fine. Like a respectably high 3, I think. I'm not quite 4 because I don't know what the long-term... For myself, someone like myself, the long-term replayability is there. But like I said, I think this is something I would really like to show to like my kids, my board game kids. I think it's something they would probably really enjoy.
Cool. That's
Museum Heist. And again, anytime you play something like by Sid Saxon or Alex Randolph, who made one of my favorite games, I think it's Ricochet Robots, like anything like someone like that, it kind of like, this is where our industry came from. So. That's cool to do.
Oh boy, I just saw the designer name for my next title. Like, let's just move on.
a person, an individual.
So my next PBU is Traintopia. This was published in 2020. I think it's just hitting stores now. This is a review copy that we received from Board and Dice. It has a current rating of 7.3 on BGG with 33 ratings, plays 2-4 in 30 minutes, and has a weight of 2. And here we go. It's designed by Przemek Wolczowiak, artist by Jakub Fachinowski and Zbigniew Umgelter. Oh boy. Sorry. Those ones are tough.
They are tough.
And like I said, it's published by Board and Dice. This is a drafting tile placement game with trains. And yeah, the way it works is you are trying to get points. Wait for it. So you put out bits, you put out tiles, obviously, with train tracks on them and other things, which I'll probably explain. And then there's also a number of round cards. So you put out like X number of round cards in the game and then you flip it over and it'll tell you what bits to put on and how many tiles to pull out. So the different types of bits are there's a train, a black train that you can grab a, I think they're mailbags. Yeah, mailbag there. And then there's a few different types or colors of meeples. And so it's a drafting game. So on your turn, you either grab a tile or you grab one of the bits on the round card and you put it into your network. And you're building tracks. So there's, you're lining up your tiles to continue to build tracks. You can have multiple tracks within your network. The only thing you can't do is create loops and dead ends. And dead ends are like trains going into the edge of a tile that doesn't... match up. You can have like open ends if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so on these tiles, there's within the train tracks, there's different like plots of land that are different colors. So there's yellow, gray, and green. Mm-hmm. And then there's also these like they're called attractions. So they're like fair. Think fairs, so like rides and fair tents and whatnot.
Carny stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. And the way it works is if you draft one of those colored meeples, you put one on the train on a track you choose, and then you score points for whatever. So if you put down a yellow or green or gray, then you score 1 point for every plot of land of that color on your track. The white meeples score the attractions. So all the attractions that are adjacent, they have different numbers on them. So you sum up the numbers and you get that many points. And you're only allowed one color of meeple on each track. So for example, you can't have two yellow meeples on one track, but you can have a yellow, a green, a gray, a white.
Gotcha.
And then there's stations which close up your tracks. You want to close up your tracks because you're only going to get points for your tracks at the end of the game if they are closed. If they're the same color, so a red station to a red station, they're worth a little less. But if you have different colors, there's only two, so red to blue, then you get more points. If you drafted a mailbag and you put that mailbag on the track, you get double your points. And then throughout the game, you can get another thing on a tile is a money token. So you put a money token down and you can spend that to get these extra tiles that are more powerful that are set aside at the beginning of the game. You can use them to change your objective card if you don't like your objective. You have a secret objective. And something else, which I can't think of. However, if you keep your money on your network, so you don't spend it, so it's still on your tiles, and the money is adjacent to a track with a black train, which you drafted as a bit, then you get points for those at the end of the game as well. Very yeah. simple game, very uh-huh. poorly explained by me just now. I apologize. So you do that for, I think it's like probably 8 to 10 rounds, somewhere in there. And you add up the points that you have, and then you add up the points based on what I was talking about, like your track size and your money and that sort of thing. And whoever has the most points wins. And that's Traintopia. So I went in with this with like absolutely no expectations. And I have to say, I quite enjoyed it. It's a great little game. We'll start with the bits. Bits are good. They're fine. I always like anything with little wooden bits, so it's nice that there's meeples and little trains. The cards are not great. And I wish it came in a smaller box. Like it's not a big game. Mm-hmm. It plays in 30 minutes. But it's in this big box, which I understand why publishers do it, but I do wish that it just came in the box sizes they needed. Despite my terrible explanation, it is actually, they're very simple rules and a very quick teach, which is very nice because, again, this is just a light game. It doesn't really offer anything new. Like, it didn't go, oh, this is really innovative, but I felt like it was really good for what it was. Like, I enjoy drafting quite a bit. And I enjoy tiling, and route building is basically what you're doing, right, with these tiles. And I think that's fun. And I think that they did a good job of presenting enough different mechanisms and different ways to get points to make it interesting. And then of course, with the drafting, you can see everything that's out there. So there's that little bit of tension of, well, what do I want to prioritize and make sure that I get what I want, you know? And again, it's not like it's, again, super deep, but hey, 30 minutes, that's pretty sweet. There are a few parts of the game that I didn't feel were quite as interesting as I'd want them to be, like the Black Train, drafting those so that you can score money at the end of the game seems kind of unnecessary, and not as interesting as I would have liked. And the secret objective cards, the way it works is you get dealt one at the beginning of the game, and then you can spend money to look at another one and then decide between the two, but you can only ever have one objective card.
Okay.
I didn't find the objective cards particularly interesting, and I didn't find, like, I almost wish you could get more objective cards, or I don't know, something, but it was just kind of like, yeah, okay, like another little thing. In the few games I played, one game we went through some of the objective cards, and the second game we went through none because it was just like, okay, this is my objective from the beginning, I'll just work through it. So just, I don't know, just not great. And in terms of variability, I feel like you'll see the same cards, the same tiles every game. The objective card deck is quite small. The round track is quite small. The round deck is quite small. So, you know, like, you kind of can get a sense of when or what's coming. Like, you'll always know. It's not, yeah, there's some variability in terms of when it shows up throughout the game, but yeah. So, while I think this is, like, it's a really solid title for what it is, I don't see it having, like, a super long staying power. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was, every time I play this, I'm like, yeah, this is, it was a lot of fun. If you like route building, if you like tile laying games, if you like drafting, but you want something like short and sweet, I think this is a really solid option. I quite enjoyed my plays of it. And that's Traintopia. I will give it a solid three. Again, solid game. Mm-hmm. That's a three for Traintopia.
Cool beans.
Pew beans.
It's been a long day.
Amazing. All right, here we go. We're gonna do some. Oh, jeez.
Well, that's brutal, man. I'm looking at the audio thingamajig-bob here, and it's just like one solid block of white when they did that.
Take your mouth away from your microphone, son.
Yeah.
All fair. Right, so this is our BGG thread spotlight, where we find a thread on BGG that we think is particularly interesting or funny, and we talk about it.
Yep.
So, and seeing as we're all the bits and we love bits, this was like, we really had no choice.
Yeah.
When we saw this one. So what is today's?
What is your favorite luxury board game item?
Luxury,
so luxurious. Oh my gosh.
So Ryan Farrell, the OP, the original poster, he says, one thing I'm proud of in my collection is my Crokinole board. I just got it this year, but it has been such a joy to bring out and play with guests. Yeah, Crokinole boards seem to be a thing, hey?
Yeah, there are quite a few people who I feel like if you ask that would say that. I know one of our bitsers, Darren, has like a handmade Crokinole board from a friend of his, I believe, and it's really gorgeous and really nice to play on. I have another friend who, I think it might have been on Kickstarter or something, but it's quite expensive. He got it. It's absolutely gorgeous and stunning that I've played on. So I think there are quite a few people who really enjoy their Crokinole boards.
And like hanging them up.
Yep. Wow.
Seems to be a thing.
they are pretty large too, so it's like, I feel like that's the best use of
stuff. Yeah, it really is.
Brant Shepherd says, I have two, my Kallax shelves, which are full at the moment, and my pool table, which we also use for gaming. Ooh, really? That's smart.
That is pretty smart.
Huh. I was worried I would drop stuff in the pockets.
You would.
Yes, I would. Totally.
I can say beyond a shadow of a doubt that you would definitely drop things in the pool.
Yeah.
In the pool holes. Do you do Kallax?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do, but not. I regret Kallaxing.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I have another just shelf that I think it also comes from IKEA, but that I used to have for other stuff, and I just space wise I wanted it for games. I keep like my small box games on it, and I feel like I fit so much for a shelf that's like the same size ish as a Kallax. I feel like I fit so much more on it.
Yeah, that's been my experience. I have Kallax like within my house that I don't use for gaming, but I have put games in them, and I just find that they're so limiting.
No, I agree with that. In terms
of flexibility and how much you can put in. I know they've got that depth, but yeah. I use bookshelves from Walmart and I'm a happy gal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there you go.
One of these days I might have to make a change.
All right, so Rob says, metal coins for viticulture. After buying these, I would consider buying similar metal coins for any games I own and love. Mm-hmm. Rob, yes.
Yep.
Yes. I have a lot of metal coins, actually. I've started taking them out of my games, and I have a drawer by my game table that has them all like labeled for different games because, I have a beautiful set of coins that you can only use for one game.
That is a great idea. Yeah. Yeah, I do that too. But then I had to put them back in when my daughter was younger because she would go and like tip them over and do stuff with them. But now I could probably take them out again.
Do you have a favorite set of metal coins?
I really love the metal coins from Architects / I guess Paladins. I don't know if they're the same. The Architects ones. I just like that they're like different and they have like, they're not like uniform type thing. They're like they're all kind of different. They have that raised feeling ish to them, so they just stand out a lot. It's cool. I'm always of the belief that like if the coin seems like it would just be like, you know, a coin that you would have in your pocket, it's like but I like the ones that like do something different or seem different.
Yeah, totally.
How about you?
Yes, I have a Spikerstadt coins, and there's only one denomination, but they're really big, and they're silver, and they're just chunky. And every time someone who's never played with them before picks one up, they like get this like, oh wow, like this look on their face, like that's a hefty coin, and I think it's just because they're kind of like big and chunky and heavy that I love them so much, but they're fantastic. So those would be my favorite.
This thing I've seen before. My trunk of Larry L says my trunk of horrors, the Eldritch Horde storage, which I bought for my 50th birthday. Have you seen this thing?
Yeah, I saw it in the thread. So it's basically this, trunk, full on trunk with like a wooden insert, and a very large trunk at that.
Yeah.
Full of Eldritch Horror stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. There's a few of those now, hey? Like the crates and trunks and they're crazy expensive.
Yep.
Do you have any games you've stored outside of the box that it comes in?
No. I don't think so. I have like a bunch of like, I did that thing when it was going around. I think it was the Spotlight or Reddit, one of the two. I can't remember where people were like putting their small box games in photo boxes.
Oh, yeah. I think Tom Vassell started that, actually.
So once I saw a bunch of people doing that, I was like, that's not a bad idea. So I have like a bunch of my small box games in like a couple of photo boxes with the labels printed off. And then, that's kind of it.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Well, Sean P. says,
what?
I know. I was like, Sean, is this you?
That's not how you spell my name, though.
My Geek Up Bits for the Quacks of Quedlinburg. It makes it my most expensive game, but they are so nice.
Yeah, they are, Sean P. You're the man, Sean P. You know, you know what you're talking about, Sean P.
Yeah, BGG's killing it with those. And the Quacks one seemed to definitely be the most popular. I mean, they make a ton of sense for that game because you're...
Once you go Quacks, you don't go backs.
Yeah, you do. I did.
No, no, you can't. No.
Okay.
Gretchen Fontenay. Most of my deluxe games, I've spent quite a bit of time and money blinging my games out, so there's not just one.
Yeah, go, Gretchen. Go, Gretchen. Go. Wizzykin says, I really don't have many, but I did buy the painted resources and metal coins for Scythe. Really like those. I've been tempted to buy acrylic tokens for some LCGs, but I've never gone through with it.
Mm. Yeah, those are always really cool. Like, I've been looking a few times at Marvel Champions fancy acrylic tokens. I've been very tempted, and I know the lots of people have the Arkham Horror ones as well.
Yeah, those are nice. And the I have the acrylic tokens for Terraforming Mars, not the like animals and whatnot, but just the tracker.
Okay.
You know, the temperature ones. Yeah. It's nice. I saw some acrylic tokens for Wingspan on Etsy. Woo!
I don't know if they're acrylic or not. I have like the I don't know what they are. They're plastics, I guess, acrylic for Wingspan. They're really nice. Again, I got them just before all this happened, so I haven't had a chance to use them yet.
Lovely. I bet you those make a good clinking sound.
They do.
All right. Philip says, I have a stack of condiment cups that I use anytime a game would have a pile of bits or tokens or anything. They're basically unnecessary, but they keep the piles neat, and the shallow curve up to the lip makes it really easy to grab any bit or token. I love how specific he is.
Oh, they're really nice.
And they are actually really nice. So they're like wooden bowls, and they're not super deep.
Yeah.
And I have a bunch of containers from the dollar store. Yeah. And I use those. I quite like that. I like the when they're clear, so you can see more than just the top.
See what's going in. That's fair.
Yep.
No one. My laminator. That's fair.
Yeah, that's a good one. I purchased the laminator early on, and I've used it a ton.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. JT Schiavo says, I'm not sure how this hasn't come up yet, but my luxury item tends to be my dice towers. I have two now for opposite sides of the table whenever we play any game involving dice. Nice. I never really got into the whole dice tower thing.
Yeah, no, me either.
They're very loud.
They are, yes. Although some of them I guess it would still go down unless it's lined inside, yeah. I was going to say some of them have like bottoms, like almost like dice trays where they have like felt, but still has to go through.
It goes through, yeah. We have a beautiful company here, Wheatland Woodwork. Mm-hmm. They do tables, but they do stunning dice towers. And I've almost gotten one a few times, but they are quite loud.
They are.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Williams says, I'd have to say my game room. I moved it to a formal part of the house, so I had to decorate the room accordingly. I have a dedicated table. It's actually too big, truth be told. And the room is decorated like a Scottish castle. Swords, knights' helmets, and shield, tartan drapes, etc. The open storage for my games didn't go well with the formal theme. So, unfortunately, the games are on a different level of the house. Well then, Elizabeth.
I thought that was so hilarious. Like, you have this, like, crazy game room, and then you're like, no, the games can't go here because they don't look good. She's like, this lady, she's... I got your back, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Because games are, I know a lot of people display them and all the power to you, but I do find them very busy. Mm. And like they make things, spaces look cluttered. So the fact that she decorated this whole room and was like, yeah, the games can't be here. They don't look good.
Yep.
Truly appreciate it, Elizabeth. All right. Lucky Henry says, I haven't found them yet, but I guess my luxury item would be a large set of D6 that are the perfect size, weight, color, and corner roundness for me. So Lucky Henry got in on this because of his preference for the correct corner roundness.
You keep it up, Lucky.
Which is a thing, apparently.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it is. Evan Miller says, you might see them referenced as a DLP printer. It uses a vat of liquid resin and uses light to harden it. It gets a smoother finish than more common FDM printers that use spools of filament. I almost forgot about another favorite luxury item, my token shield from Dogmite.
Okay, so he's talking about a 3D printer.
3D printer, yeah.
Which, you don't have one, right?
No, I don't.
Do you think you'll ever get one?
Yes, I will.
I think so. I think so, too.
I need to learn how to do it. We recently started using one at work, so I've been learning a little bit more.
Oh, yeah?
About it, so, but, yeah. One day.
I'm kind of the same. I'm waiting for them to become a little bit more ubiquitous, cheaper, but I think, I think they're pretty great for board gaming. And then he mentions this token shield from Dogmite, which I Googled, and oh my goodness, it's basically a Lazy Susan for board game resources, and it's really nice.
Yes, I think I'm pretty sure I've seen those at like JetCon or like at their booth at one at a con.
It's pretty
sweet.
They
make really nice.
Do they? All right, David Eisner says, you can take your gaming tables and metal coins and quack bits and do what you will with them. I'm still blown away by the little carpets from Marrakech. I just thought this was so cute. I've always wanted to play that game, Marrakech. So it's for those who haven't seen it, it's looks like an abstract game, and the pieces that you get are little carpets. And they're made of cloth, and they really are very cute and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They are. That cover, just the cover. I love that cover.
Yeah.
Chris Laudermilk, a new favorite. My Iron Glaze 400 boxes arrived. Yeah, those are starting to hit people now.
They are.
Iron Glaze are amazing. They are.
They are. They really are. Yeah. Roland Hemisphere for the win. Oh, sorry, ahead.
I was going to say, I'm assuming everyone knows, but Iron Clays are like the poker chips that Roxley released for the brass games that everyone uses for any kind of money denomination.
Yeah. Now, but I was going to talk about them in a little bit, too. The Iron Clays 400 box, though, is like, man, Roxley knows how to put on a production. It's like a wood box with felt drawers for these poker chips. Like, it's stunning. Yes. Absolutely beautiful. And as I was saying, Roland Hemisphere for the win. He says, right now it's a table full of friends. Aww. Yeah.
Definitely. That's what I'm going with. That's mine. What Roland Hemisphere said.
Yeah.
I mean, a table full of anyone at this point I would take. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, even Michelle at my table. Always,
I don't know, man. That's going far. You might want to try to use your daughter's stuffies.
You know, we've done that when we've played games recently. That's happened.
Do you know what else you could do? You could make cardboard cutouts, and then Bitzers can pay us money. And
oh my gosh, that's the best idea ever. Just like yes.
Play games with them. There's actually, I saw, I think it was in Taiwan, where they did a robot grad ceremony. So there's like all these robots wheeling with diplomas, and they had like the iPads as the face, and they had all these kids' faces. Oh, it was weird. Okay. My favorite is, I have two. One is the Roxley Iron Clays. Like, of all the deluxe bits, those get played with the most. They're so beautiful and chunky and just great. I use them for VPs and money all the time. And my other one is my Macau trays that I made. So someone within the city like cut the wood for me, and then I put them together and stained them, and it's basically you fit the windrows in the middle, and then it's got a tray for each of the spots, and then you just move the windrows in the middle, and the bits stay where you put them, and they don't get mixed up. And that just makes my heart sing. It's a lovely thing. Yeah.
Very good. Very good, Michelle.
Yeah. And those Stonemaier boxes were pretty good back in the day, too.
They are. You know, I have 1, 2, 3 of them. I don't think I've ever used them.
No. But
they look really nice on my shelf next to like all the games that look like books. So.
Well, and some of them were kind of obscure, but the one, there's one of them that had the wood, gold, stone. That's the one that I have, and I use them all the time.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so URA said one of mine, was said in the thing, is the iron clays. The iron clays are awesome. They're amazing. They're great to use for all sorts of things. That's like one of the bits. I don't even, well, from the previous, not counting the new Kickstarter, but like from the brass games, I have mine out and I just keep them out to use with other stuff. And then my other one, as was mentioned in the thing, is the Quacks bits, and they're not nearly as quote unquote luxurious some other stuff, but I find they just, I love them so much, and it makes, you know, they're almost twice as much, just having the bits for everything, twice as much as the actual game costs, but whatever, that's okay. They're just perfect for it, and I love them.
Yeah. Well, and in all fairness, we were at a conference, a gaming con, when Quacks first came out, and the one copy that was there did get played a lot, but by the end of the weekend, it was starting to wear.
Yes, definitely.
So you basically have to get the BGG bits.
You have to.
Have to.
Have to.
Yeah.
You know what else we have to do?
Make some baseball noises.
Baseball next up.
Next up.
I haven't done the slap in so long. My hand hurt when I do it. When I did it.
Oh, really? It's kind of weak too. I got to be honest with you.
It wasn't my best job.
It was not your best. That's what my daughter says to me every time she asks me to draw something. She's like, "Mommy, can you draw me a car?" And I'll draw, and she goes, "It's not your best." All right. Well, this bit is our next up, where we talk about a game we're looking forward to purchasing, playing, whatever.
Yep. All right. So my first one I'm going to say here is just because I want to make sure it gets played, and I do have it, but I have not played it yet. Is a game that I played at Gen Con last year and was probably one of my top plays there, and I really enjoyed it. I have no idea who distributes in these. It was at the Fantasy Flight booth, but I do not. It is distributed by Catch-Up Games, but I don't know. I feel like it hasn't gone out there very much. It also has got an awful, awful name for the game itself, and that is Fertility. It came out in 2018, according to BGG, but again, it's a game that's not, you haven't heard a ton about. And when I played this game at Gen Con, I absolutely adored it. You could not find it anywhere, and again, this was a game I just landed up getting before everything kind of happened in the world. But this is a game, if you think of King Domino, it's a domino-esque tile placement game, but it kind of takes King Domino up to the next level. And introduces things like lots of resource management in it, and different ways, lots of ways to score. So it's kind of like if you like King Domino as a quick filler game, but you feel like you want something that's similar that gives you more of an actual kind of board game experience. That's what I got from when I played Fertility, and I have just been dying to play it again. And this will probably be the first game that I play when things kind of
with your cardboard cutouts.
I could see people. Yeah, or I get some cardboard cutouts and do that. So but that's
I've always wanted to play this one. Yeah, curious about it. Yeah.
I there was something about it that just kind of grabbed onto me, and part of that I think is King Domino, that I adored King Domino. I played King Domino I can't even count how many times. But this kind of gives you a little bit something extra. It's still a quick game that takes that you play in under an hour. I think BGG says 25 to 45 minutes. But it is quite enjoyable.
Cool.
I actually played my copy, which I finally own.
Yay. Yeah, I remember when this came out, and I knew it, like the few people who I heard played it liked it, but it didn't. It just came and went like so many games, right?
Part of it might have to do with, I really, I just, I, there's a bad choice on the name. Like, I know, like, you know, you're trying to have a fertile land and everything, but that's not what we think about when you think of a game called Fertility. You're not going to think about, I think it was a really bad choice for names. I think that hurt things as well.
Fair enough. Yeah. All right. Well, my next up is Praga Caput Regni, which is coming out apparently in 2020 by the wonderful and talented Vladimir Suchi, who his last few releases have been Underwater Cities, Pulsar 2849. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of his ship game. Now I can't think of the name. But anyways, wonderful designer. Shipyard. There it is. Fire. Oh, Last Will. That's right. I forgot.
Last Will.
Yeah. So some games that I really, really enjoy. And so this one, there's not really a whole lot about it on BGG. But it's the theme is, not that the theme really matters because it's a Euro. I'm sure people will be annoyed that I said that. I apologize. That's my opinion. But you're building the medieval city of Prague by choosing from six ever-changing actions. And one of the mechanisms in this is three-dimensional movement, which I think sounds interesting, or could just be super gimmicky. Who knows? It says, players choose from six actions on the game board that are always available, but which are weighted with a constantly shifting array of costs and benefits. You can increase resources, improve the strength of your actions, build the city, the bridge, or city walls, gain additional actions, participate in the construction of a cathedral. So it does sound like a lot of Euros.
But there's like some 3D components to it. There's like the...
Yeah. So the 3D movement, it looks like they're almost kind of like Agra, where there's like these tiered stages. I'm going to guess they feel a lot like tracks. Like, I don't know if the three-dimensional aspect of it will actually matter in terms of the mechanisms. No,
it's a track.
Yeah, it just looks like a track, but still, I mean, cool, whatever, sure, sounds fun. So on the forums, Vladimir said they're still working on the rules, however, the date says 2020 on BGG, so fingers crossed.
My guess, this is supposed to be an Essen release, that would be my guess.
Yeah,
but
I would think so.
We don't know what's going to happen with any Essen releases or stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not holding my breath for sure. It seems late, but I don't really know much about game production. I do appreciate that in there. So there's some images of the prototypes, and they're using the Sagrada.
Okay. I wonder. I was like,
what? I recognize that.
Okay, that's fair. That's what it's from.
Yeah, but I mean, Vladimir Suchi, I think he's a designer to watch. So I'm excited. Yeah. It will
definitely be a gooder.
I would think so. Yeah. I expect it to at least be a 3, but there's a good chance it'll be a 4 or 5. That's fair. All right. Well, we all hope you are staying healthy, safe, happy.
Let us know who your favorite team in the Korean baseball organization is.
Yes, please. We are dying to know.
Mine is the KC Dinos, in case anyone wanted to know.
Oh my gosh, me too.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah. Love the Dinos.
I love those Dinos.
Yeah.
They have a jack-up mascot, like a really muscular dinosaur mascot.
Yeah. So. I know.
Yeah, obviously.
The green one, right?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, see? All right, well, before we close out the show... We just want to say thanks again to our amazing listeners and our show sponsor, Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. The next time you're playing with someone who has AP, may we suggest you use that time to click the subscribe button and leave us a review on Apple Podcast. Thanks again. Bye.
Bye. I don't know why I always wave when we sign up.
Because you're Sean, and that's what Sean does.
It's fair.
And, integral part of your character.
That's true. Doing is nonsensical things as much as possible. That's
don't ever lose it. It's part of your charm.